Hello, sorry to interrupt. Interesting conversation, I'm sure. I want to know if Demetrios and our colleagues have resolved the problem of aggregation or disaggregation. Have you talked over the lunch? No? Oh, okay. Too bad. We shall reconvene. Okay. So we move this afternoon to the modeling component with four presentations of all different approaches. And I'm pleased to let my colleague David, and I will let you pronounce your name so that I pronounce it correctly.
Yeah. My name is Doiparan.
Okay. So it's all yours. Yeah.
See that entire morning we saw those is a new generation of science, because earlier we built up a hypothesis and then tried to judge it. But these days, because of these high throughput and big projects, we have first those humongous amount of data in front of us, then we start to build up our hypothesis in unbiased way. So now the four magicians will show those edges, those hubs and keys, that how to get some meaning out of those data. And moreover, many a times they will cut those because of that problem in the funding. So we know where not to go. Their data will say where not to go. Please, David.
Thank you. So I won't say a lot more, but I think what's going to be interesting, I think, here is we're going to hear from four really preeminent scientists that take different but highly complementary methods to model complexity in a very quantitative way. And I think you'll hopefully hear a lot about how much there is in each one in terms of depth and how they might work together to work with a lot of the data you heard about this morning. So I won't take any more time, and I'll introduce Peter Hobman, who's the director of the Social System Lab, a Social System Design Lab, George Warren Brown School of Social Work at Washington University.
Peter. Thank you. Good afternoon. So what I was going to do is to begin and try to give you a sense of I'm not an obesity expert, but what I would like to give you a sense of is what are the kinds of questions you could ask with system dynamics, and how do you go about answering them? What's the added value of a system dynamics approach? And then illustrate that with some of the illustrate that with some of the work that we've done both in the field and also in the area of domestic violence to try to give you a flavor. So part of it is setting this up so we could also have some rich conversations later. I just want to acknowledge some of the folks who have supported this research that I'll be talking about. We have a National Institute for Mental Health grant that's supporting the Social System Design Lab and some of the domestic violence work. We have some work in terms of the National Science Foundation that's been supporting our work, and I'll talk briefly about the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services grant that we did with Transformation. We have two partners, Save the Children UK and Foundation for Ecological Security in Mongolia and India, respectively, that we've been developing some of these participatory methods with. So briefly, for folks who are unfamiliar with system dynamics, this field was started with Jay Forrester in the mid-1950s as industrial dynamics, and really thinking about how do you manage new kinds of industrial organizations in manufacturing and where you have to do marketing and so forth. And that was really sort of central to thinking about new kinds of industries emerging. Has origins in classical nonlinear control theory. Models are represent at the aggregate level using systems of differential equations. They could be multiple level, but you're looking at sort of the averages or total number of people who are in a particular risk category. And I'll go through some more examples of this as we go into this. It's a method for understanding, designing, and managing complex systems, and it responds to a particular kind of problem where we are mismanaging them because of flawed mental models, and I'll talk about that as well. And one of the primary sort of concepts that we're using in system dynamics is to really focus on understanding the feedback effects in the system as well as the stocks and flows. And an important point to keep in mind with system dynamics right from the beginning was that it wasn't about modeling data, but it was actually about solving problems. So there's a pragmatism that goes into this, and an understanding and an idea about what is it that's going wrong when we try to solve dynamic problems in complex systems with limited resources, limited data, and how do we improve that process. So this is my very simple picture of reality. And the kind of problem that system dynamics is trying to tackle is where you have these mental models, their representations of reality, they're influenced by perception. Perception includes things like delays, but also we just may not see the right kind of information. There may be uncertainty, biases, and so forth. And those mental models are used to drive action. So when we're thinking about trying to intervene on a system like obesity, we have mental models about who the stakeholders are. We have mental models about how to influence policymakers. We have mental models about industry and marketing and so forth, and marketing has mental models of consumers. And these are all sort of interacting, and what you're trying to understand is the whole set of interactions. When I talk about system dynamics, I actually find this diagram and a set of diagrams very useful to begin, because one of the things that happens when we think about complex systems is we are making assumptions about the nature of society and the nature of the change we're talking about. So on the horizontal axis, you could have different views from subjective views of social science to objective views of social science, and those are issues about epistemology, whether we think of reality as being deterministic or voluntaristic and so forth. And on the vertical axis, thinking about what kind of change. Are we trying to improve the status quo, its optimization in some way? Get it to work better? Are we thinking about basic sort of structural change? Now, when Burrell and Morgan introduced this particular diagram, they were picking up a lot of conflicts and paradigms of understanding organizations, and then reframing the research into this framework, or rethinking about and realizing that the conflicts that were appearing in research on organizations had a lot to do with the underlying assumptions about your views of social science and your views of social change. David Lane, London School of Economics, took that same diagram and said, you know, this is interesting. We could actually map different approaches of system dynamics into that same map. And so a lot of it has, for example, been down in this, had ties to sort of functionalist sociology, but you have other activities that could actually happen up into these other quadrants. And I found this particularly useful when I started getting involved with system dynamics, because when you're trying to answer the question, what is system dynamics, is it just about differential equations or is there something more to it, you're also picking up on sort of some of these variations amongst the people in the field and where people are working, and that has to do with the kinds of problems that people are working on, whether they're working supply chains or thinking about obesity or public health. So one of the ways I think about and use this diagram, and I think it's useful for today, is in thinking about this morning's discussion, is you could really think about there's sort of four ways you could frame a problem around obesity. You could think about it as a system design problem, and that would be about identifying key drivers of obesity, resource allocation, policy, implementation strategies. You could think about it as a coordination problem, where you're less concerned about, say, the technical answer, what's the best way or what's the highest leverage point. But really, what is it we can come to some sort of agreement? If we could come to some sort of agreement, a consensus about what to do, we might resolve the problem. You could think about a coordination problem might be if you need to go to dinner, it doesn't really matter where the optimal place is. It matters that you can agree and get there. You could spend a lot of time arguing. So you could actually solve the bulk of the problem just by agreeing. You could also think about problems as learning problems. So you could think about that the difficulty that's happening in organizations or communities is that we actually have flawed mental models that we're using to interpret the information that's guiding us in the wrong direction as we think about interventions. So could you actually develop models which help people learn better? An example there might be, could you have could you involve people in helping them develop their own models at the family level, for example, or at the school level, and help them think through their own modeling, so develop their capacity? And then you can think about problems like we were at the end of the morning talking about restructuring problems, where you're actually really rethinking the boundaries of the system. You're thinking about, you know, we've been looking at this problem from a particular lens, and we've not really been involving industry and marketing and what we know about how the economics are working, the food production industry. What happens if we expand the boundary and actually begin to sort of redesign that with a broader group of stakeholders? Now, the reason this is important is because when we're thinking about modeling from a system dynamics perspective, we could actually use models in any of these four quadrants. We could think about modeling from the point of view of system design problems. We could use modeling to address sort of a coordination problem. We could think about modeling as learning problems, where you do think about organizational learning or K-12, and you could think about system redesign problems. So when I think about the actual modeling process, this is a simple picture in some ways, where when we're thinking about the question about how do we, So one of the things here in system dynamics we're often talking about is structure and then behavior, and behavior is often defined in the context of what we call reference mode. So these are behavior over time graphs of the problem we're trying to model. And what we're doing is we're building a model that we believe explains the reference modes. And so we have one use of data that fits into this category here of thinking about things like model equations, constants, and table functions. And then we have another use of data where we're thinking here about the reference mode, the behavior pattern, the trends we want to try to understand. And then we do the comparison here in testing and analysis. And that often leads to model refinement, or in cases where we're rebuilding or working off other people's models, we're actually replicating the study. So can we produce the same results? Can we go across different communities? Does the same structure explain it? The other point to emphasize here is that the testing, that is, how do we know this model is right, has a lot to do with how we set up the problem to begin with. A good model, if the point here is to address a coordination problem, a good model is one that had the right stakeholders in the process and you reach some sort of consensus. If it's a learning problem, the question is really, can people learn faster using these models as opposed to not using them or using other models? If it's a system design problem, it's a question about did you find the right leverage points and are you able to actually influence them in a way that impact the system? So I'm going to give you a couple examples of some work I've done with mandatory arrest policy and domestic violence, and the articles that were listed in the materials talk about that work, so I won't give the citation. But one of the things in the United States that's happened is that most police departments have adopted a pro or mandatory arrest policy over the last 10, 15 years. And what that means is if there's evidence of domestic violence at a household, the police are either encouraged to make an arrest or must make an arrest in the case of mandatory arrest, even if they don't see the actual act. And one of the things that's happened, this was initially set up as a policy to protect women because the police were not intervening, and in principle, if you had perfect police intervention and follow-up, you could have reduced the number of women who were murdered by about half. Was that at this point now about 20% of the arrests for domestic violence are actually women. So you have an unintended consequence of increasing victim arrests that comes from a policy that was actually sort of from a social science point of view actually pretty seriously researched, if you're familiar with the Minneapolis experiment. And the question, this has certainly caused a lot of controversy. So are these women who are being abusive? Is it that the criminal justice system is becoming more fair in arresting? Are there such things as women batterers, for example, and is it catching that? Are women becoming more aggressive through equity or batterers manipulating systems? And you could think about these kinds of problems as not just having different interpretations and explanations for what's happening, but having very divergent kind of policy and program recommendations. One would lead you to essentially create special programs for treating women batterers. Another one would do more victim advocacy and try to hold the batters accountable. So we use system dynamics to try to understand this phenomena and unpack this. I won't go over to the data sources. I think we'll make the slides available if people. But this is just to show that we use multiple data sources, qualitative, quantitative, numerical, individual level, so on. And this is a very simple picture of the stock and flow model. So in system dynamics, we have stocks, which is like the number of people in this room, number of people outside the room. And then we have transitions, which are these flows here. And what you're trying to model are the feedback in terms of the structure, the stock flow structure, as well as the feedback loops that influence the transitions. So what you have here is cases coming in, and you have aggressors who are at risk of arrest, and then aggressors have their first arrest. Now they are aggressors, they are at risk of arrest, and they have priors. And then through this work, we actually discovered what we call the crossover mechanism, which is where the aggressor's risk, he gets arrested, but now she's actually at greater risk of arrest. The risk flips over, and the explanation is that he's actually learned something about how to manipulate the criminal justice system. And so this was something we were able to sort of look at and understand and support through the data. And you have a number of variables here that cooperation, for example, is more at the interorganizational level. The propensity to report is something that exists more at the community level. So it's a very simple picture. So we did a bunch of in system dynamics, we try to build up confidence in a model like other simulation methods through a series of tests. boundary adequacy, do we include the right elements? Is it dimensionally consistent? Are the units right? Structure assessment, we ran this through multiple extreme conditions tests and so forth. And here's just a quick shot that shows you, so the replication of the, this is the, in the gray is the actual data, and in the white is the simulated data, and it does a reasonable job of replicating the behavior mode. One of the things we do with these models, because when we're building these kinds of models, we often have a lot of uncertainty in the parameters to consider what's the impact, what's the sensitivity of the behavior to the values we're using. So in this case, we don't have a lot of confidence in the our initial guess at what the coordination, the effect size of the coordination intervention, which is implemented in year three. So we vary plus or minus 50%. And what you could see here is that the distribution tends to fall in the favorable direction. This is the first arrested women, so lower numbers is better. So if we're off, our chances of being in the favorable direction are better. The next thing we could do once we sort of develop confidence is now we use the model to actually begin to explain and understand what's happening. And the way we did this was we essentially turned loops on and off through a behavioral analysis. And what we were able to show is that a number of these competing explanations actually play a role. Most of them actually play a role, but at different phases of the system as the system evolves. So initially, the initial increase and decline has to do with net widening. As soon as you criminalize something, you actually increase the number of people who would have contact with the criminal justice system. But that fades pretty quickly. Then you have this initial increase here, which the batter's manipulating. And then in this period here, you have essentially cooperation being the driving mechanism. Now, one of the points here is what it means for this to be driving behavior means is there are feedback mechanisms where if you took them out or you weaken them, they would actually alter the trajectory from increasing to decreasing. That doesn't mean that the other parameters won't affect this system. You could actually have parameters that have a correlation and would move the values up and down, and so that would show up in a survey, and that would show up as statistically significant. But in fact, it wouldn't actually alter the trajectory of the trend. So when we're thinking about obesity, the question is, what are the things that will actually change the trajectory, not just the things that are associated with a higher or lower trajectory? So this is one kind of analysis that's very suitable for system dynamics, where we're thinking about specific feedback mechanisms, explanations, and trying to parse out which ones are driving system behavior over time. Here's another kind of analysis, and you could do this in other methods as well. But in system dynamics, what makes it amenable? It's a fairly fast simulation technique. So you could run a lot of simulations very quickly over a wide range of conditions. And what you're seeing here is a contour plot of the response on the ratio of men who are arrested to women who are arrested, aggressor arrest to victim arrest. So higher the value, the better. Obviously here, and then we've varied here the timing of the coordination intervention plus or minus 5 years relative to the mandatory arrest intervention and plus or minus 5 years on the advocacy intervention. So there are three community interventions. We're varying the sequence and the timing. And one of the things that we could show here is the nature of the complex interactions between multiple interventions. So in this case, it turns out the advocacy intervention, it implement it whenever you can. It's going to be beneficial. But the coordination intervention, which means getting police and victim advocates to work together, if you could implement it 5 years ahead of time, great. But if you can't, you're actually better off waiting until after you implement the mandatory arrest intervention, depending on how delays and so forth go. So one of the other things, because the model studies feedback loops, and you can actually, in stocks and flows, and they're actually fairly easy to communicate, to audience, one of the things that we've been doing a lot of work with is involving stakeholders and participants in this process. And so I'll talk briefly about this. And in system dynamics, we talk about this as participatory group model building methods. So just quickly, you see this is a project we did in Mongolia with Save the Children UK looking at impact of child money program. This is some work we did in Andhra Pradesh in 2008 looking at soil fertility. Here's some work we're doing with an NSF study and executive directors looking at implementation of evidence-based practice. And the thing that struck me about this is a diagram that the staff translated a week after we did this, and we're using this. Essentially, we did the modeling 3 days and 1 week. Over the weekend, they sort of translated and simplified the diagram, translated into Mongolian, and we're then using this actually to influence policymakers by Monday. Now, we didn't spend like a whole several weeks introducing system dynamics. So this is a this kind of, you know, if somebody could take this and use this and leverage this to start communicating what it is they're thinking about to policymakers, that was very interesting to me. We took that kind of work and then we leveraged that into thinking about how do we do this in mental health state transformation work. So this is now part of, this is some modeling work we did, qualitative, looking at statewide mental health transformation in Missouri through SAMHSA sponsor grant. And it's actually included as part of the appendix of the state-federal cooperative agreement, talking about, it was sort of essentially a qualitative analysis of how various policies impacted various transition points and in a population model, and gave some insight on that. This is some more recent work where we are doing this now from those two experiences. And I should say, in this group, the folks who resonated the most were actually the consumers and family members. They were the ones who had a way of actually talking about the kinds of barriers they're experiencing. And then the this is some work we did in India where we started thinking about how could we actually evolve in like development situations. So here you see a story of this is villagers who are talking about declining soil fertility and the feedback effects. And the red lines are lines that they added about 2 minutes after seeing this diagram. So people said, oh, you missed something. It's not just that, you know, the chemical fertilizer that we're encouraged to buy that costs money and the cows. And so we began correcting that. This is a recent work from more recent work this summer where we spent about 2 months in the field, first with a sort of an advanced team, just meeting and working with the villagers to try to understand what are the problems that they're facing at the ground level. And then this is our first meeting essentially to validate the reference modes. And this is after having done PRA exercises and then household surveys of the village and then coming back and saying, this is what we heard you talking about. And are these, in fact, the trends that you're experiencing? And out of this comes a model that we actually developed, a preliminary model. We were able to go back and forth and elaborate. And the importance of this is that one of the things that we have seen from this work is how incredibly important it is to understand a particular local reference. Like, so what's happening in Boyapalle on declining fuelwood is different from what's happening two villages over or on the other side of the rainforest, on the forest reserve. Building the trust and being able to get some of the things that people don't talk about openly is critical in this process. So being able to, harvesting strategy for tendu leaves, which they use to make cigarettes, is something they wouldn't admit to because they set fires to get bigger tendu leaves. After spending some time with them, we were able to sort of hear some of those stories as well. And I'll end on this note. We're talking about childhood obesity, and just to sort of illustrate that we can do this kind of work, one of the things is that there's a big effort in system dynamics on K-12 education. And this is an example of a five-year-old's system dynamics model of a wildebeest, cats, and dogs system. And you see, you know, you have basic stocks and basic flows, and there's a few mistakes. It's not a set of differential equations worked out, but it's also got some basic structure to actually work. And one of the things I would sort of challenge us to think about if we're thinking about something like obesity and building capacity is actually involving children in this process. There's, in fact, from my point of view, it's both important to get their perspective. It's also an important part of building future capacity for addressing these sort of longer-term issues.
Thank you very much. You touched on so many interesting things there, Peter. I think, you know, I was struck by the first slide you opened up with, but then I think the participatory nature of the model building is what I think in the end of it I kind of come away with the most. Before I get into too many comments, I'll just see if there's any questions that are burning out in this floor here. Yeah, go ahead. We have about 10 minutes for questions and answers.
In the analysis, you were talking about modeling and prior distributions and so on, yet I haven't seen slides that shows us the modeling equation and what prior distribution you have used. Do you have a slide for that?
I don't have a slide for that, but I'm happy to. The equations for the model that I showed, for example, are in the papers that the system dynamics review paper, and it actually has the model itself that you could go and look at, and it describes the model in detail. In terms of the distributions, we have sort of some ranges, and so then we use the model through using the sensitivity analysis. We identify the parameters that we need to sort of collect more carefully, or the nonlinear functions we need to describe more carefully. So this particular model, for example, is sensitive to how we think about cooperation and its relationship to advocacy. So one of the next steps is to sort of refine that and sort of get a better idea. I would say there's sort of two ways of thinking about this, though. There's two pieces. One is addressing specification errors, and the other is addressing measurement or estimation errors. And part of what we do here is we leverage a lot of this sort of participation to get essentially a better specified model that's relevant to the local level, and then use that to identify the parameters and bootstrap ourselves into the modeling process so we can identify what is it where we really want to invest our scarce resources for collecting high-quality data. And sometimes that's like the reference mode where we spent two months doing that, and sometimes it's about a particular relationship or hazard rate.
Do you have citation on that? You may have mentioned that.
It's actually, I think it's included in the material that...
It's one of the two papers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll make sure it's up there. Yeah.
Yes. So one question I have is the estimating the causal impacts. I mean,
yeah.
That's pretty important, right? I mean, you can ask your people in the field to ask to get you estimates, preliminary estimates that you might use to refine later on. But, you know, as an example, many years doctors thought that hormone replacement therapy was actually good for women who had... past menopause, in fact, it's harmful. It was based on observational data, right? So I'm just questioning the extent to which you can actually proceed to make policy statements based on non-causal estimates.
So there's a couple of different pieces to that. So an example in the work that we've done in Boyapale, so we build an initial preliminary model, and we're just checking the logic on that model. Is it even consistent? And one of the first things we found is that there are mechanisms we didn't, that must be there that they didn't describe or identify. So we go back and we actually sort of ask more questions. This work actually is continuing. So we're doing monthly surveys in this particular household and also the markets presently. For the causal estimates, if you're talking about sort of coefficients or that might be associated with parameters, those are the ones that we would do the sensitivity analysis. Many of them, when we include the feedback mechanisms, they often don't have much impact on the qualitative behavior. They have an impact on the numeric behavior, but many of these relationships actually are not... we could spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, whether something's important or not, and then we vary by plus or minus 50%, and it turns out not to be significant. Or if we have a nonlinear function... we could vary it, and it turns out all that's important in that nonlinear function is that it's monotonic and increasing. The actual shape doesn't matter. So that's where we are thinking about that. In terms of, you know, if we don't have everything rigorously evaluated and tested, could we make policy recommendations? I'd go back to the beginning of thinking about system dynamics. The question from a system dynamics point of view is, what is the mental model that the decision makers are going to use to make that decision, and have you helped them improve their perspective or their understanding of the system? So sometimes simply just mapping out the stocks and flows is sufficient to give people information to think differently about that leads to better interventions. It could be just including additional stakeholders or just thinking about upstream effects when they've been focused on a particular service. And if the system has improved, then you move on. So there's always that kind of pragmatic focus. That doesn't mean you couldn't 2 years later, 3 years later, go back and sort of say, you know, this is what they did. Is what the outcomes that we're observing and evaluating actually consistent with what we're observing in the system in terms of the model? So you could always go back and sort of check some of these things.
I'm just curious. I wonder, you show the sensitivity analysis. Have you had a chance to look at specificity and also receiving operation curve?
I'm sorry, the last part?
ROC curve.
No, we haven't. So for those particular models, those aren't the things that we were really focusing on. We've done some work where we started looking at implementation strategies. And that gets into more of the questions. But that's sort of early work that we're doing now. So I guess I would say, you know, for any of these models, and this goes back to that first slide, it's really critical to think about what's the purpose of the model. If it's, and if you're arguing for more specificity in terms of, or more precise estimates, what is that going to purchase you? I'm not arguing against. I like good numbers. I like from an engineering point of view. But it's important to always remember what the purpose is from a policy point of view.
And can you say that in terms of prevention of obesity, how should we like I've done obesity research for a long time. I still don't know what would be the question for obesity in terms of a prevention. What are the areas we should look at? Should we look at, like what we discussed this morning, individual or school or community?
Yeah.
It's not what is the question? What do we want to get
So, at this point?
So I think from a system dynamics point of view, this question about all of these levels and how they might be interacting and just sort of scoping out, just kind of beginning to map out would be a great sort of first step. And just beginning to think through what's the logic, what do we think some of the relationships are, what is it that's supported in the literature, and then begin trying to sort of isolate components that might be important or influential, and then begin to sort of simplify the model. So the domestic violence model is actually, you could say a third or fourth that I showed here was a third or fourth generation that was building on a problem that was essentially tracing the system, beginning with initially in 2000, Batters Intervention Services, then moving into the prosecutor's office, and now thinking and it was sort of figuring that out. So that's kind of that would be my inclination.
I think we have time for one more question.
Okay, so my question is really about the process of engaging people and thinking about feedback loops, because one of the things that we did in an earlier McGill meeting, health platform meeting, where people were asked in a survey, what's the most important thing to do about childhood obesity? And one of the things we did with that data, and there were like 180 different suggestions or something like that, is we used actually Donella Meadows' framework of places to intervene in a complex system, although we collapsed it because 12 steps was too many. So one of the things that we found is that people, the gap area is thinking about feedback loops and delays. They think about structural elements, they think about goals of the system, they think about structures, but they don't think about feedback loops and delays. And we found this in a number of analyses with this approach. So is it just the visualization that gets them thinking about it? What else do you do?
So I think one part is you have to have an external diagram. If we had a conversation, we're not going to capture that conversation. And when we capture the conversation through group model building exercises and up in a model, when we do it, we tend to be very specific about the language that's used. And that generates, so one thing that happens is people become, they realize that might not be used in the same term the same way. They begin to think about, well, I thought that was a positive, or fidelity of implementing evidence-based practice was a good example. Some people thought that was a good thing in the mental health transformation. Some people thought that was a bad thing. But when you begin sort of tying these together, you realize they're talking about two different, the same variable, but one feedback loop is a desirable one, and the other one was actually one you wouldn't want to have operating. And they are coming from two different organizations and seeing two different perspectives. So people have sort of different pictures of it, and being able to map it out is one way to sort of make that transparent. I think it's I might go in. I mean, I've been in enough situations and where I think I know what the feedback loops are, and until we start building a model, I don't want to make any claims. So I ask the question: could I imagine there are some feedback loops? The answer is yes. What are the ones that are actually in play? That's going to be involving, you know, a group of stakeholders, researchers, or participants, depending on the system.
Well, which ones could we create in order to actually?
And that would be the better, right? So once you have that, then you're really thinking about trying to encourage people to restructure the system in some way, either by changing the flows or changing the feedback.
Yeah, and that's what struck from your first slide. Is you start out with the quadrants, but really you want to think about the optimization as structural, as a, you know, you want to do both in some sort of linked way, I guess.
Yeah, it may be a problem that sort of lives in the area of functionalism where it is an optimization problem, but you may realize that there's no way, given the system as we currently understand it, it's currently functioning, you can't solve it. So you've got to expand the system boundary, or could we restructure it in some way? So
great. Thank you very much, Peter.